Ladies and gentlemen, the World Wide Web proudly presents Recorded Live in Chicagoland, USA.
Can I get a booyah?
Booyah!
Or can I get a booyah?
Booyah!
New episode of the podcast.
Kyle and Luke will talk about dunes and alienate half of the audience.
Hey, cartoons, they're a thing.
Oh, yeah. They are.
So I'd been wanting to doing this since the beginning of the year, and just so been so busy preparing for MarsCon that I haven't had time to work this in. But we did this last year, and I kind of liked it, so I wanted to do it again, where you and I kind of went down the list of all the animated features that came out in the year 2012 and just kind of touched upon each of them and say what we thought about them and stuff. So,
right on. I think I may have seen a higher percentage of them this year than last year.
Yeah. So so going in order, I know I made this list like I think a month ago, or wait, February 25th. Okay, that wasn't too long ago. Based on what they were saying at the time was the highest grossing films of the year. So going in order, at the top of the list was Brave. So
I didn't know Brave got more monies than Wreck-It Ralph.
Well, Wreck-It Ralph, you have to remember, came out in November, so.
Oh, that's true. So it would have still been in the theaters when this was being calculated. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, at this point, who knows? Looking at it overall, maybe Wreck-It Ralph has caught up to Brave, but, you know, just going by, you know. Yeah, anyway, so, as I said before, you know, I did like Brave, but I still kind of felt like, you know, it was a little bit of a, you know, repeating plot situation. And I know that you said to me that, like, well, Luke, you're the only one that remembers Brother Bear. It's like, yeah, but I remember. I'm sorry.
Well, beyond that, other than the obvious bear transforming, I don't think that it's quite borrows as much as you think it does. I think this is far more of a mother-daughter story than it is anything that Brother Bear did. That said, I don't think this is one of the stronger Pixar movies.
Yeah, this is probably my, like, second to least favorite Pixar film. But, you know, again, that being said, you know, my least favorite Pixar film is generally better than, you know, 75% of films in general, you know, so. But I mean, just, you know, it's like, are there wolves in Scotland? Could she have changed into a wolf instead of a bear just to make it a little different than Brother Bear? I don't know. It just makes me feel like, you know, how the hell did Lasseter think that, you know, nobody was going to notice or something? I don't know. So, let's move on the list, and then we'll say things about Brave more later. Second on the list in Moneymakers, Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. Did you see that?
No.
Have you seen either of the two previous Madagascar films?
I haven't. I can't get past. I guess it's the voice acting I can't get past, because it isn't the character designs. I like, I'm forgetting the name of the character designer, but that's a character designer I in general like. But there's just something. In the trailers, when I watch them, nobody's personality seems different from anybody else's. Everybody's personality just seems to be screaming.
Yeah. I don't know. As a franchise, I think it's pretty good. But you do make a valid point. I do like the fact that the strongest set of characters from the Madagascar films, which are the penguins, got their own show on Nickelodeon. I thought that made a lot of sense.
I remember Penguins of Madagascar as being that show that everybody was having a really easy time on while all of us were busting our butts on Fanboy.
The thing, it's kind of hard to explain since you haven't seen it, but the thing I liked most about Madagascar 3 was there's a chase sequence at the beginning of the movie that I thought was really well done. I mean, not that the rest of the movie is crap or whatever, but like the opening action sequence that leads to like the end of the first act, it was like, wow, that was a really cool sequence and also really funny. So I just wanted to mention that. Number three on the list is Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
I want to see that. I haven't seen it.
Okay, here's the thing. I have seen it. However, I did not see it in the movie theater. It was one of those kind of borderline movies. It was one of those borderline movies that I wanted to see it in the theater, but I knew that Sarah also had a somewhat interest in seeing it. So I usually was trying to wait until she and I could get out to see a movie together, just so that I'm not, you know, seeing movies twice that I don't necessarily want to see twice. And it just, you know, we just kind of missed our window. And then it was available on digital download rental or whatever. So I believe that's how I watched it. I don't know. It's like...
This is the same studio that made Despicable Me, right?
Yeah, yeah. Despicable Me is a movie I totally freaking love. It's just kind of like this whole franchising... It's like, here's the thing. The Lorax isn't a sequel, but it's part of a franchise of the whole Dr. Seuss movie thing that they've been doing the past several years. And it's kind of like, I see those movies...
Which is weird because they're not made by the same people.
Yeah. So it's like, I see, you know, things like The Lorax, and I'm like, yeah, this is all right, but, you know, it's, you know, nothing that I'm going to freak out about like other films that I'm about to mention.
I don't quite understand why the big hurry to, you know, rehash an old thing when rehashing an old thing doesn't necessarily make for higher ticket sales.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing you listed there was, of course, Brave, which is, you know, an original story. It's not, you know, based on a storybook. It's not even based on a classic story like, you know, like something like Snow White or Cinderella was. It's just, you know, here is our original story. It is the top grossing animated movie that we're listing.
Yeah.
So, what, you know, if dollars are what speaks, why is everyone still doing this?
I don't know. I guess, you know, so who controls all that? Is it Universal controls all the Dr. Seuss things, or are they all, like, done out to different studios like the friggin', you know, Marvel Comics characters where, you know, five different studios control different characters under the same umbrella or something? I don't know.
I can only assume that it's, you know, a by-property thing because it seems like all these different studios are handling it, although I don't really know who distributes everything. Because, you know, Horton Hears a Who was made by Blue Sky. This was made by that studio that I don't actually know the name of. And then, who put out the Grinch and
Illumination, isn't that what it is?
Yeah.
Illumination.
They're not doing a very good job of selling the name of their studio.
Although they have kind of adopted the Minions as being their mascot character.
Oh, yes, the rabbits. I mean the Minions. Yeah.
So anyway, next on the list is Wreck-It Ralph, which is like, do we even need to talk about how awesome this movie is?
It did everything right.
I know. I bought it the day it came out on DVD and Blu-ray. I haven't watched it yet because I've been still in post-MarsCon, recovery mode. But it was important to me. I wanted to buy it the day it came out just because I know that they keep track of numbers like that. Like, how much did it make its first day? It's like, I'm buying it the first day so that they can see that, you know, there's fans out there who love it that much and want there to be, you know, hopefully a sequel in the future or just more stuff, you know? So, and, you know, it's like, why isn't there a full-blown... freaking like Sugar Rush video game, you know, there should be by now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably because whoever handles the home console versions of these things is so awful. Although I think that was THQ and now they're gone. So we'll see what happens. Because yeah, I don't know if you saw what the, home console version Wreck-It Ralph game was.
I did not, but I heard it was a side scroller.
A really terrible side scroller. I could have dealt with a decent side scroller that like used their, you know, various game abilities and like took them through the different. This no, it just didn't work at all.
And then they put Ralph in one of the Sega racing games as an unlockable character.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, at least.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just kind of like I mean, I don't know if Heroes Duty would make any sense to turn into a real game, but definitely Sugar Rush, and they already have a Fix-It Felix that exists, so, you know, yeah.
Which, did I mention the arcade situation in Disneyland last time I was there?
Maybe.
Because, you know,
You mentioned that there was a Flynn's arcade there for a while, then they took it down.
Right, and, you know, I was kind of bummed that they took it down because, you know, I had a really good time playing all those classic games in good condition, and I was like, they have Wreck-It Ralph coming out, why are they not exploiting this? The Starcade, the arcade in Tomorrowland by Space Mountain, while we were waiting on the very long line for Space Mountain at the end of the day, we could see them working on the new arcade, and so there's just this huge row of classic games, and then a block of four Fix-It Felix Jr. games.
Wow, awesome.
And that's just what we could see, you know, from the Space Mountain line.
So I wonder if they're going to change the name of it and make it like Litwax Arcade or something like that, or I don't know.
That would be awesome, but whatever it is they do, I know that they're going to have, like, a nice classic arcade in Disneyland, and that's awesome.
I saw that in the Disney Movie Rewards thing, they were having a contest to win a Fix-It Felix console, you know, or, you know, cabinet to bring home, so I entered that. And then because of the points I have saved up, it's like, with your points, you could enter this contest 75 more times, and I was tempted to, but I didn't, so...
Yeah, I really like the Fix-It Felix game. I just want to play it with real controls now because, you know, computer controls, iPhone controls, no thank you. But, you know, if it were just out for a home console, if I could, like, download it for $1 on my Wii U, I would love to play it there.
Yeah, but I got to say, after playing it at Disney Quest, it is way better than the Flash version that people have been playing at home. There's certain elements to the game that are missing, you know, when you play the cabinet version. You know, versus the home version. So the cabinet version is way better, and it's like if you're into classic gaming like you are, once you get the hang of like how the play controls physically work, like, oh, you have to, you know, be moving slightly and then hit jump to jump a certain way or blah blah blah, and, you know, understand the physics of, okay, when this piece of brick falls in here, that means you can't touch it or else you'll die, or like, once you get the hang of all those things, you know,
should be part of a classic game.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's like, you know, Donkey Kong or anything else. It's like, it becomes, you know, it's like, not that the game becomes easier, but it's like, okay, now I get to understand how this all works, and I can start trying to improve my skill level and get better and better at it. So the handfuls of time I got to play it when I was at Disney World was like, man, part of me just wants to stay here all day and try to get some, like, super amazing high score or try to get to the kill screen or whatever. But, you know, I didn't want to waste me and Sarah's vacation time on just doing that. So,
right. Well, so, yeah. You know, maybe they will come out with a sequel or something, or just as the years go by, these machines will become more common.
Yeah, director Rich Moore was on the Nerdist podcast recently, like the day before it came out, so you can listen to that. And in there, he made some hints that, you know, there are ideas for sequels for a sequel in the works or something. So, I mean, considering that this broke Disney's record for opening weekend for a theatrical animated feature, you know, I don't see why they wouldn't be wanting to continue this as a franchise of some kind. I mean, it would be...
And I feel like it's the kind of universe that lends itself to having one, unlike a lot of, you know, features.
Yeah, yeah. So, so we love Wreck-It Ralph. Okay, so which brings us to the next item on our list, Ice Age Continental Drift.
What number is this one? Is it eight? How many ice ages are there?
I'm pretty sure it's four. Let me ask the question. Did you see it?
No.
Okay. I was not sure if I was going to see it, and then they announced that the Simpsons 3D short, Maggie Simpson in the Longest Daycare, was in front of it. I'm like, okay, now I have to see it. Damn
now
it.
Now that we can talk about. I've seen that, and I have to say it is the best Simpsons thing I have seen in years. I like it better than the movie.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I enjoyed seeing it in 3D, but, you know, seeing it in not 3D, it's a great film as well. I found it interesting that, you know, due to the nature of the piece with Maggie being the star, you know, none of the voice cast are involved. And I have to wonder.
It turns out that these days, if the Simpsons shut up, they're good again. And the sign gags are all really good,
too. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, for the record, I'm still a fan of the Simpsons TV show, you know?
I'm not.
You just don't like it anymore?
I don't like the current Simpsons. I feel like it's... A lot of people like point to the first season as a weak season, and while it's not as funny, it had heart, and I think the heart is a really important element to the Simpsons, and I don't really feel like they have it anymore.
Hmm. I've kind of always felt, and I don't know if this is necessarily still the same, but for many years I kind of felt like each season is kind of a parody of the previous season. Like, they keep kind of going, you know, farther and farther out on the weird fringes of what they can do. And, you know, at this point it's like, you know, it's like the fan in the diehard loyal fan in me never wants the show to end. But at this point, if they did announce, like, okay, you know, it's ending after one more season, so they could, you know, have the time to do, you know, series ending type of stuff and then let it end, I could probably deal with it. But, you know, especially considering that new Futurama episodes are being made, which at this point is probably my favorite show of all time. So, because it's ranked higher than The Simpsons on my TiVo, so that's kind of the indication. I mean, not that they'd ever really be cross-programmed against each other, a new episode of The Simpsons versus a new episode of Futurama, but still, I kind of felt like Futurama needs to be on top, because for so many years, I wanted there to be more new Futurama, and now that it's back, I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few ways I think about The Simpsons. There's, you know, if I'm to compare it to like another very long running thing, you know, I think of South Park, and they seem to still find new fresh things to do. The Simpsons, I feel like they've
The South Park has the advantage of being like, you know, they literally create their episodes for the most part, like, you know, a week before they air, so they can do an episode on something that's incredibly fresh and topical in the news that they would never have known 8 months previous was going to be an important thing to comment about. So, you know,
what I wouldn't give to see Glamorous Godfrey in action once more. Would you ever consider throwing your wig back into the ring?
Go back to being a villain? Oh, forget that. Being hated is the worst feeling there is.
Oh, you've got it all wrong, my friend. Once you see it my way, you'll understand that being hated is the greatest feeling in the world. Don't really care for chasing women. Never was keen on booze. Don't take cocaine or Mary Jane. No, I get drunk on booze. That's B-O-O-S, not Z-E as before.
We get it.
Because you've got to love to be hated. Find the good in being bad. Oh, the crowd is full of gentlemen, but they've paid to see the cad. Yes, it's a hoot, a kick, a gas when you're the villain of the show. But once you wear black, you'll never go back. It's a high to be loathed. Chucky, Stalin, Megatron, Eric Cartman, Donkey Kong, Vader, Nader, Simon Legree, Terminators 1, 2, and 3, Iago, Joker, Voldemort, McEnroe on center court, Mr. Burns and Skeletor, keep your good guys, what a snore! When it's your head they wanna sever, and your blood they wanna shed, you know you're gonna live forever if everybody wants you dead. So listen up, because I'm giving the best advice you'll ever know. So feel the thrill, I know you will. It's a high to be loathed.
I'll feel like I'll live forever as long as everybody wants me dead. Okay, Burns, Glamorous Godfrey will wrestle again.
That cocaine I ordered is taken forever.
Sure, but I mean, I think the solution for The Simpsons would have been to have spun off something else long ago, because it's actually a very rich universe, but we're still focused on this one family after.
Well, that's
all
the thing.
Time.
Like about 5 or 6 years ago, they were doing episodes where it's like, let's do an episode that focuses on Skinner, or let's do an episode that focuses on Flanders or Comic Book Guy. Like, they were actually doing episodes about other people who lived in Springfield, and us getting to know them a little better, and they seem to have stopped doing that. And it's like, you know, why are you not still doing that?
What I really liked is, I haven't read them in a while. They could still be very good. But when the Simpsons comic books, like the Bongo Simpsons comic books first started out, mm-hmm. and they had a regular Simpsons title, but then they had Bartman, Itchy and Scratchy, and Radioactive Man.
Mm-hmm.
And all those three titles were freaking fantastic. And it just kind of showed, okay, here are these other parts of the Simpsons universe that you're not seeing.
I remember
here's some fresh material.
One of their issues, they did kind of I can't remember exactly the plot was, but it, you know, somehow Professor Frink was involved, and you know, they ended up in an alternate universe Springfield where you got to see the same Springfield characters, but they had taken on different roles, kind of, you know, like Lenny and Carl, you know, were the two policemen instead of. Or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but my favorite gag in that episode was there's an ad on a bus, and it said, you know, tune into ABC for what's that guy's name? Myers something. The guy not Matt Groening, but the real guy at The Simpsons who is kind of the comedic, you know, mastermind.
Al Jean, Mike Reese, Sam Simon.
God damn it. They did an article about him at cracked.com how I'm just going to do a Google search cuz it's going to bug
James L. Brooks?
No.
I just listed all the names I know.
Let's see. Simpsons. Roger Myers. No, that's
Oscar Myers.
George Meyer. George Meyer. Huh. Da, 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 da. I think maybe that was it. I don't know. Anyway, let's just say it was him so we can move on. but it was like, you know, so the bus ad pulls up and it's like, you know, tune into NBC, you know, late night with George Meyer. So it's like he was the guy that went on to, instead of Conan O'Brien.
Instead of Conan.
So anyway, spent way too much time setting up that stupid gag, but whatever.
I personally am satisfied.
So, yeah, and I think in that issue, Sideshow Bob was actually the principal of Springfield Elementary instead of Principal Skinner. And, you know, so he was still Bart's nemesis, but in a different way. So, anyway.
But my point is they have a wealth there that they're just kind of refusing to use.
Yeah, yeah. So that's our discussion on Ice Age Continental Drift.
That is as much as I have to say about that movie.
Well, it's kind of like the Shrek franchise. It's like Shrek 1 is a good movie. Shrek 2 is a good movie. Once they got to 3 and 4, it was more like this is now a sitcom that they just put out one 90-minute episode every, you know, 2 to 3 years. So
but then Puss in Boots was an awesome movie.
Yeah, Puss in Boots was excellent. And the weird thing about Puss in Boots is they don't – it works – if it's a sequel, it works, and if it's a prequel, it works. They never establish where in the timeline this happens, but either way, it works.
If you don't care about Shrek, it works.
Yeah.
If you've never seen Shrek, it works.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, you know, I saw Continental Drift, you know, just because of the Maggie Simpson short, I wanted to make sure I saw it because I had no idea if it was going to be readily available anytime in the near future. Blah, blah, blah. But one thing that was interesting about it that I liked was that... oh, now I'm forgetting another person's name. God damn it. The little person from Game of Thrones.
I don't know the fellow's name, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Now I got to look him up.
Live Googling.
I could call him Tyrion Lannister, but he is... Where did it just go? Damn it. Tyrion Lannister. Damn it.
Can we isolate that?
Hmm?
Can we isolate you going, ah!
If you want, sure.
I think that what this show needs is a soundboard.
Ah! Game of Thrones TV series, cast and characters. Where the frack is his name? Peter Dinklage. That's it.
Dinklage.
Which should be like, you know. Anyway, Peter Dinklage. So he is the little person who plays Tyrion Lannister on Game of Thrones. And whether or not you've seen Game of Thrones, that doesn't matter. The point is that Peter Dinklage is an awesome actor who's appeared in tons of stuff. He's in both versions of Death at a Funeral. And he's great. So Peter Dinklage was the voice of, like, the bad guy in that movie. And I didn't even know that until the end when I saw the credits. I'm like, oh, crap, that was Peter Dinklage. How cool is that? So it's like, I hope he gets more voiceover work because he did a really good job, you know, in that film for you know, what that film is. You know, it's
now,
like...
Did he do his own voice or did he do a voice?
I think he... It might have been a little bit more gravelly, you know, because he was like, you know, kind of meant to be like a pirate, you know, ape kind of character. So, you know, feel my fury or something like that, you know.
Oh,
so, but anyway, where's my list? Okay, so, okay, and then next on the list, sixth one down on this list, Hotel Transylvania!
I love this movie.
Oh, I love that movie so much, too. It's like...
I almost like it as much as Wreck-It Ralph. But, you know, it is very specifically appealing to my senses in, you know, the over-the-top cartoony way that you don't necessarily see very much these days.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, it's more substance to Ralph, but it's a really terrific movie.
And it's kind of a little bit vindicating for me because, you know, so many, you know, comedy snobs... you know, kind of wrote it off like, oh, it's Adam Sandler, so it must be a horrible piece of crap. Like, oh, him and David Spade and Steve Buscemi and Kevin James, it's all of Adam Sandler's buddies. It must be another Adam Sandler piece of crap. Bleh, boo, it's going to be a bomb. It's like, fuck you, that movie did so fucking well, you know.
The name Genndy Tartakovsky outweighs whoever they might have given him, but... This is also a place where Sandler, I know him to excel.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Sandler's a good voice actor. It's just not usually what he's doing.
Yeah, it's like,
and he did a voice,
and it's such a great idea. You know, the general concept, and the movie was co-written by Robert Smigel, who is, you know, a Saturday Night Live veteran and Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, and, you know, a Saturday TV Funhouse. You know, so.
And, you know, Smigel's really good, but that also didn't outweigh the Tartakovskiness.
Yeah.
The balance was there, and it made the movie work.
Yeah. So, the last I had heard that there is going to be a sequel, but that Genndy isn't going to be directing it. Is that still the case?
It would make sense, because Genndy already has two other features going at Sony. Because Genndy has some feature that I know nothing about that is his... and then the Popeye movie.
Oh, yeah. So let's just cross our fingers and hope that whoever is directing this will, you know, see what Genndy was doing and be like, oh, okay, let's, you know, let's keep all the good parts of that.
And that I have some faith in that because, you know, the cartooniness is what's important about it. And, you know, that's very well established in the first one. They would have to just be making another movie entirely in order to screw that up.
And speaking of Genndy, I'm still bummed that they canceled Symbiotic Titan. I really liked that show.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I would like to go back and, you know, because I didn't catch the whole series. I pretty much caught the beginning of it and then kind of trailed off. But is that, do you know that to be on any of the
I'm not sure.
Streaming places? Because I know Cartoon Network stuff in generally isn't, but I think by the end of this month that some stuff is supposed to be. I know Adventure Time is.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it wasn't exactly like a cliffhanger, so to speak, but the show was meant to be a serial, so it's kind of like the show just ends, and there's no resolution to the plots they had been setting up for, you know, seasons, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice if they could at least bring it back and give it, like, a 90-minute movie to finish it off or something, but, you know, whatever.
By the way, second animated project in which Brian Posehn plays a robot.
What was the first?
El Super Bisto.
Oh, okay, yeah. I still haven't seen all of El Super Bisto, so... but I just want to point out at this point in our little countdown here that those six movies, Brave, Madagascar 3, The Lorax, Wreck-It Ralph, Ice Age 4, Hotel Transylvania, all of those were within the top 20 highest-grossing films of the year. So, nice. 6 out of 20. So, you know, animation is important, motherfuckers.
You know, I have to say, this was a particularly strong year for animated movies.
Yeah, and there's still more on the list that I think are really strong. Like our next one, Rise of the Guardians. Did you see that?
I didn't. How was it?
It was really good. Sarah and I enjoyed it a lot, and I liked the idea of this whole, and I realized that it was based on a series of books. I do know that, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, where basically the idea is all of these fantasy characters that, you know, are the type of characters that supposedly, you know, kids, you know, we tell kids they're real, and then when they get a certain age, oh, they're not real or whatever. So it's like, you know, Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, Jack Frost, the Sandman, the Boogeyman, the Man in the Moon, you know, just kind of like there's all these kind of concepts, and they brought them all under this umbrella and basically have them be like they're this team of, you know, people who helps, you know, safeguard the children of the world, but also have, you know, these holidays that they have to kind of handle. And even though they released it at Christmas, the main like crux of the film, like the action, kind of centers around the winter, spring leading into Easter. So it's not exactly an Easter movie, but that's kind of the main holiday they're dealing with at the time.
I know in the advertising, a lot of the focus was on Jack Frost. Was he the central character, like they lead you to believe?
Yeah, he was. Because a lot of the plot has to do with him kind of discovering who he is, because he doesn't even really know who he is or where he came from. And then we find that out throughout the course of the movie. I would definitely want to see more Rise of the Guardians related, you know, stuff in the future. But
I have to say that the only reason I missed this one is because it was such a strong year for animated movies. And this one just kind of didn't, as far as, you know, the advertising went, didn't jump out at me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, the style of it just kind of is not the most striking in the world, even though it looks competent. But, you know, among the Sea of the Wreck-It Ralphs and the Hotel Transylvanias and the Paranormans, this one didn't catch my eye for that reason. Yeah. But if you say it's a solid flick, I will check it out.
Yeah, well, I can say Sarah really liked it, so, you know, that probably holds more water.
Only because she likes fewer things than you.
Yes. She also,
as most humans do.
She also loved the next movie on our list, Paranorman, which was
very
awesome.
Good movie.
Yeah. I mean, you say things. I can't think of what to say.
It's probably the best out of the stop motion stuff that came out this year.
Definitely.
Definitely. So, visually, this is the second feature to come out of, I don't know why their name's escaping me, but it's a stop motion studio in Portland that also made Coraline.
Yeah.
And, we'll talk about Frank and Weenie later, and I think that also had its own strengths and weaknesses. But as far as like getting expressive stop motion character happening, they are probably the best at it.
Yeah, they did some really amazing, you know, stuff with what they did there. Just plus the notion, just like trying to figure out a good stop motion way to convey zombies, you know. That, you know, with that are supposed to have like decaying faces that stretch and, you know, stuff like that, and they really did a great job with it.
Plus, I really liked the misunderstood zombies.
Yes, and plus I liked that at the very end, the kind of bonus tag, you know, after the credits, was them showing like a sped up way of how they build the physical models.
That was neat. There's actually a few of those online if you look for them.
Oh, okay, cool. But I mean, it's also neat from the point of view of hopefully, you know, parents are sticking around and showing that to kids just to point out, yes, this was not done by a computer. They physically built these things and then, you know, filmed them one frame at a time. Because it's like, I don't think kids fully understand when they see something, you know, that's stop motion animated, that it's not computer animated, you know, that there's a difference. So,
yeah, they kind of don't have a reason to not know that, I suppose. Like,
because computer animation has become so, you know, can recreate physical things so well now that it's virtually impossible to tell the difference unless they, you know, well, depending on what it is, I guess. But anyway.
Plus, in a really good-looking stop-motion movie like Paranorman, they're doing such a good job, you have no reason to believe that they didn't computer it up hardcore.
Yeah. What was I going to say next? Oh, the next thing's on our list. Beauty and the Beast 3D, followed by Finding Nemo 3D. And then, slightly going out of order, there was also Monsters, Inc. 3D. And I saw Beauty and the Beast and Finding Nemo, but I didn't see Monsters, Inc.
Of those, I only saw Beauty and the Beast. And I saw it so I could see the Tangled short.
Oh, yeah. Or wait, because the Tangled short was freaking amazing.
Oh, God. Worth the price of admission.
Because that was another one where I was, like, on the fence. I'm like, well, am I really going to go see Beauty and the Beast 3D? I don't know. And then when I saw the brief clip of With Tangled Ever After, and I'm like, oh, shit, yes, now I'm going to go see it for sure. And it was great. It was fast-paced. It was funny.
Like I mentioned, I think I probably mentioned this on the Fumpcast. It reminded me a lot of the 90s Roger Rabbit cartoons, where it's basically just, like, kind of this Rube Goldbergian roller coaster ride of a cartoon where one thing sets off another and it's just all this flying around crazy expensive looking action. and it was funny as hell.
And they put it out on the Cinderella DVD for some reason. So I'm hoping,
is it like available on its own anywhere?
I don't know. What I'm hoping will happen eventually is because they have like the Pixar Shorts volumes 1 and 2. I'm hoping they release a Disney Shorts collection, because they've put out a whole bunch of decent ones, including Paper Man, which just won the Oscar. So hopefully they'll do that and, you know, have it be available on DVD or Blu-ray at some point in the near future, I'd hope. Because they're Disney and they sell things, so, you know.
You know, if nothing else, I think I just found it on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Is it like an official Disney thing, or is it somebody bootlegged it?
I think somebody bootlegged it, but the quality's very high.
Okay, cool. So yeah, Tangled Ever After is what that's called. So
I'm downloading that later.
We ever expect to be human again?
Ah, human again.
Human again.
Yes. Think what that means. I'll be cooking again. Be good looking again. With a mademoiselle on each arm. When I'm human again, only human again, poised and polished and gleaming with charm. I'll be courting again, chic and sporting again.
Which should call several husbands alarm.
I'll hop down off this shelf and toot sweet be myself. I can't wait to be human again.
When we're human again, only human again. We'll be knickknacks and whatnots no more. When we're human again, good and human again.
Poor Sherry, what if all the uproar? I'll wear lipstick and rouge, and I won't be so huge. Why, I'll easily fit through that door. I'll exude savoir faire. I'll wear gowns, I'll have hair. It's my prayer to be human again.
Human again, only human again. When the world once more stops making sense, I'll unwind for a change.
Really? That'd be strange.
Can I help it if I'm too tense? In a shack by the sea, I'll sit back sipping tea. Let my early retirement commence. Far from fools made of wax, I'll get down to brass tacks and relax.
Never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo.
Could you read it again?
Well, here, why don't you read it to me?
All right. I can't.
You mean you never learned?
I learned a little. It's just been so long.
Well, here, I'll help you. Let's start here.
Here. Okay. 12?
Two.
Two. I knew that. Two households.
You know, and not that there was anything wrong with Beauty and the Beast, Finding Nemo, you know, or Monsters, Inc. necessarily. I mean, they're the same movies we love, but, you know, they're in 3D, so they're slightly different to look at now. So, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it sort of works. Adding the 3D to a 2D movie doesn't bother me. I don't know how much it adds.
Yeah.
But I do have to say I was disappointed by the lack of the new song.
Yeah, the Human Again song. I was like, why in the hell would you not include that, you know, in this version? I mean, it made no sense to me. It's like they made it for the DVD release so there could be new content, and
IMAX release before.
The IMAX release, yeah. And then it's on one of the DVD versions, and
yeah.
It's like, why the fuck wouldn't you include that in the film? It makes no sense.
Maybe it's because if they did, then they, in the interest of consistency, would have to add Morning Report to Lion King, which I don't care for.
Yeah. But
Human Again, I think it actually adds to the movie. I think it bridges the two sections in the movie together
yeah.
a lot better, you know. I was really fond of that sequence.
Yeah, and plus it was, you know, by the original, you know, songwriters. It was part of the original treatment, and then when they made the Beauty and the Beast Broadway musical, they included that in the Broadway musical, and people loved it so much they decided to make it for the IMAX with the original animators and voice cast. So why the fuck didn't they include it in the 3D version? It makes no sense.
Yeah, weird.
And I know that Little Mermaid 3D supposedly is coming out this year. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any cool shorts in front of that. So,
yeah, I might have to check that out because I haven't seen that movie in a very long time.
Yeah. So Frankenweenie. So let's point out the fact that Beauty and the Beast 3D, Finding Nemo 3D, and then Frankenweenie. And again, I think those first two came out slightly earlier in the year, but the fact that Frankenweenie made less money than all the other movies that we've mentioned so far is like kind of surprising, you know?
It isn't if you look at the track record of stop-motion Tim Burton films.
Oh, okay. I guess you're right about that.
I think those are things that there's a few factors there. First of all, I think those generally do better on home release. Like, in the long run, they do well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was probably like, okay, Disney, I'll make this Alice in Wonderland movie if you let me make that Frankenweenie stop-motion movie I've been wanting to make for years.
Because Alice in Wonderland made crazy money, right?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it did. So, yeah, it's, and I know you liked Frankenweenie more than I did. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I think that there are... You know, when I was talking about the strength of Paranorman being the way that they're able to make characters expressive, this doesn't happen in Tim Burton stop motion movies, and I don't know why. Because everybody's got like the same face all the time, and that, you know, hurts the characters, because like the voice actor will be like performing a line a certain way, and you'll need to feel a certain way about the line, but the facial expression isn't consistent with it. But I think there are a lot of things that are good about this movie. They're just in the wrong proportions.
Yeah.
I think that they should have gotten onto the, you know, giant kaiju pet destruction craziness a lot earlier in the movie and had it last a lot longer. This should have been more Gremlins-y, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite parts of Frankenweenie were the opening bit where we're watching the film that he's made with the dog and stuff.
Yeah.
Because that reminds me of stuff I made when I was a kid, and I thought that was really brilliant. And I liked, what is it, Martin Landau did the voice of the teacher, and I really liked that character.
Yeah, I would have liked to see more of that teacher. I don't understand why he didn't come back at the end.
Yeah. So
I have to say that the animation of Sparky was absolutely brilliant throughout.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting the use of Martin Short and Catherine O'Hara doing multiple voices in this movie.
Yeah, how about that? Like getting voice talent that can do more than one voice and having them do them.
Yeah,
play more than one character. How about that?
So okay, so moving on, another stop motion feature: The Pirates Band of Misfits.
I had been looking so forward to this one, and I was so disappointed by it.
What was disappointing about it for you?
I felt like they didn't make the characters connect. They were like not – the stakes weren't high enough. I didn't really understand why I was meant to care.
Yeah.
And that really hurt it for me. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. Visually, it was freaking beautiful because, you know, it was like, you know – I even going back to like watching, you know, Wallace and Gromit and the Were-Rabbit, every so often I had to like stop in the action sequence and remind myself, these are all physical things that they made by hand. This is not computer animated. This is, you know, an amazing feat. And, you know, I think they definitely, you know, kept that quality level or made it even better for the Pirates Band of Misfits.
Aardman stop motion consistently makes really great looking projects. I think the big difference between this and a Wallace and Gromit is that this is Peter Lord and not Nick Park, and Nick Park is just a better writer.
Well, I think the movie is based on another set of children's books, I'm pretty sure. And the thing that about this, which I think is a product of it being from the children's books, is that in the children's books, they didn't give any of the main characters actual names. They're just pirate captain and, you know... the curvaceous pirate or whatever. It's like all the main characters on the pirate ship don't have names. They're just, you know, listed by description. And I just think that's really off-putting. And I realized that it was trying to like a cutesy thing from, you know, I don't know. It just kind of bugged me that I can't go, oh, what was my favorite character? Oh, it was, you know, The guy with the thing or whatever, you know. It's like the fact that I can't say it was, you know, Frankie Stenchbeard. He was my favorite character, you know, or whatever the frick they would have called those people, you know. But
it's even more annoying to me because it was so close.
Yeah.
By the way, did you notice at some points the Queen's gaze when she was just kind of like staring almost expressionless at something is very similar to a... face that Sarah makes when she's staring into space.
I didn't notice that, but I'll keep an eye out for that.
Please do.
Yeah. So I think I like this movie more than you did, but you know, I don't know how to end the sentence.
it was such a bummer because it was so almost there and I really wanted to see awesome animated pirate flick, and it is a gorgeous animated pirate flick. So I can't say that it was a bad movie. It wasn't a bad movie. It just wasn't to a storytelling standpoint that made it from good to great.
Yeah. And then the last one on the list here is I'm going to sneeze again.
Bless you.
The Secret World of Arrietty.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I almost didn't catch this movie, but I managed to at the last second. So how old is this film? Is it, I mean, was it made in the...
I think there's only tends to be like a year's wait for us and Ghibli films.
Cool.
If
cool.
That long. But no, I thought... I feel like Ghibli's output has just kind of generally been solid since Spirited Away.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been disappointed by one of their movies since, even if one gets like, oh, this one isn't, but you know, I liked the last one as well. Why am I not thinking of the name? Little Murthing Likes Ham.
I'm blanking as well.
Ponyo. Ponyo. Yeah, I really like Ponyo as well, even though people are like, oh, I don't know, this one shoots a little bit. No, it's a great movie as well. And yeah, I really like this one. I think they did a really good job of selling the tiny universe, which is what makes it, which really sells the idea. Like, you know, for example, when they have water, like the droplets just look huge.
Yeah, yeah. Just that whole The Littles aesthetic, but, you know, done so super well.
And, you know, as usual, there's a really, as it usually goes with Ghibli films, there's a really awesome, crazy old lady in it. I have to say, there are, like, a couple of shots where she just completely loses her mind and the expression on her face and the pose just gets incredible. I would have liked to see a little bit more of that. Because, you know, sometimes Miyazaki movies can get really comfortable in their Miyazakiness. I would love to see them occasionally branch out like that.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, that all of those movies were within the top 200 grossing movies of the year.
That's awesome.
So in my opinion, my top five animated features for 2012 were number one, Wreck-It Ralph, number two, Hotel Transylvania, number three, Paranorman, number four, Brave, and number five, The Pirates Band of Misfits. So, would you agree with that, or would you swap something out, or what?
Let's see. I can't remember the order you just said because I immediately started thinking about mine.
All right.
Mine would be Wreck-It Ralph, Hotel Transylvania, although they're pretty darn close to a tie.
I had
Paranorman. Let's see. How many was that? Was that three? Paranorman, and then Frankenweenie, and then probably Brave.
Okay. So you and I are pretty close in opinion on the past year. But yeah, so the Oscars, the nominees were Wreck-It Ralph, Brave, Pirates, Band of Misfits, Paranorman, and Frankenweenie. And the thing I find the most interesting about that is three out of the five were stop-motion animation.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, that was pretty darn neat.
Yeah, it's nice to have a year with this many, you know, this many like really visible stop-motion films out.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, hopefully that means that our form will continue. And the weird thing is I just saw a link to an article online that apparently Disney currently has no plans for any future traditionally animated films at this point.
I don't understand why people are as blown away by that as they are, because they haven't really made very many in the past decade.
I mean, I'm not blown away by that information. I'm just disappointed because, you know, it was like Princess and the Frog did moderately well in theaters, but then nobody gave a crap about Winnie the Pooh. So,
because they didn't advertise it.
Well, that plus I think all the years of like the Piglet movie, the Tigger movie, the Heffalump movie. It's like everyone just figured this was another, you know, piece of, you know, of that, you know, stuff. So it's like, oh, that isn't important. It'll probably be out on DVD the same day. We don't need to go see this, you know. So, you know, it's like if they would have chosen, you know, something else or an original thing to do instead of Winnie the Pooh. I mean, I enjoyed Winnie the Pooh for what it is. I think it's great, and Steve Anderson did an awesome job, and the voice cast is great, and there's lots of funny bits in it. But from, you know, as far as like choosing what should we do next in traditional 2D animation, they should have picked something else if they wanted to try to keep the 2D animation alive. So
yeah. Well, I mean, here's how I feel about it. First of all, if they were to make a feature that looked like Paper Man, I'd be very happy about that.
Oh yeah.
Second of all, I like Tangled and Wreck-It Ralph better than any 2D project they've made in the past 10 years, so it's hard for me to feel really bad about this.
Yeah.
I'd be more interested in seeing somebody new and different make a, you know, very different 2D animated film than what Disney would make, because, you know, it's not the 90s anymore. And for them to go back and try to do that again, I don't feel like it's, you know, I don't feel like it's an honest representation of what anybody wants to make, because it's a different time. You know, I think in order to make them the way they used to make them, it would have to like really specifically be a throwback rather than them really progressing with it. I think it's going to take another studio to do, hey, here's what a modern 2D animated film can be like.
Yeah.
To make it work. So I'm not particularly bothered by this, because this doesn't like spell the end of the medium just because they're not doing it anymore, because they already weren't doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of bums me out to look at, well, going back to the Oscars, I mean, you and I both seem to agree that Wreck-It Ralph probably should have gotten the Oscar for Best Picture.
Right, so
Best Animated Feature, and that, you know, I just get the feeling that, like, the Academy is at this point where, you know, this category has been around for 10 years now, and Pixar has done such excellent work over the past decade that they're just like, they don't even, I just feel like that the Academy isn't seeing all of the animated features, they're just voting for whichever one is from Pixar, you know? It's like,
yeah,
it just kind of feels that way to me, because, I'm sorry, I mean, Brave, I liked Brave, but it didn't deserve it as much as Wreck-It Ralph, Hotel Transylvania, or Paranorman did.
Yeah, you know. And Hotel Transylvania didn't even get nominated, right?
Yeah. It did get nominated for a Golden Globe, so...
Yeah. Well, and I think this kind of, like... This is the problem with lumping all animated features into one category as well, because all of these films aren't necessarily of the same genre. They just all happen to be animated. We're judging them by the medium, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, so
at the same time, yeah. You know, Up managed the best actual feature nomination last year, and I think that says something, that that's able to happen again even though this category exists.
Well, that wasn't last year, but it was a previous year.
2 years ago then.
Yeah. Toy Story 3 got nominated for best feature too.
Oh no, you know what? I think I am thinking of Toy Story 3 and not Up, because I don't think Up was. But yeah, Toy Story 3, which is both an animated feature and a sequel.
Well, that's how damn good it was.
It was.
And it's just kind of weirdly, you know, like, they made such a great, beautiful effort to make it be like, okay, this is Toy Story 3. We're going to put a cap on the movie franchise with this. We're going to go out beautifully. And then it becomes the highest grossing animated film of all time. And Disney's immediately like, well, we got to make Toy Story 4. It's like, fuck! So
I don't actually know if that's happening for sure, because I heard rumors about it and then I heard that it wasn't happening. Have I told you what I would really like them to do?
What?
I want to see them make a movie that is set in the universe from the beginning of Toy Story 3, where it's just, you know, the play universe.
Yes, yes.
I would adore that movie.
Well, they're doing the Toy Story shorts that take place after Toy Story 3.
That's pretty cool. Like, do shorts all damn day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know... That's a way to keep the Toy Story franchise alive without having to necessarily make an official Toy Story 4.
I love how many shorts Pixar puts out.
Yeah.
And like that Buzz short with all the
Happy Meal toys, yeah.
Yes, that was amazing.
I also liked the vacation one with Barbie and Ken.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, that one's really funny, yeah.
Found a love, but she was just a fling. And then I met a girl and felt a different thing. It's like a hit in the ring, like you're pulled by a string. Can't breathe, like you're choking on a chicken wing. It was a thing called a zing, and I wanted to sing and listen to the ballads of the man named Sting. Lady looks in your eyes, and it's suddenly spring, like when Nala looked at Simba in The Lion King.
Throw down?
No, I just came closer to hear you better.
Oh, come on, just give it a try.
All right, maybe just a little.
So listen, all you singers from here to Beijing, you better crack the box string, get ready to clean, cause if love was money, you'd be getting cha-ching next to a zing, Cuba's arrows, a little beast thing. It was a zing and a zang and a zingy-dee-dee, and there was only one lady in the zing for me, cause when you zing,
what's the zing?
You better know one thing, the only thing you're gonna sling is a wedding ring.
Zing that we shared, singing in the rain. Now I'm feeling no pain.
It's a real time for celebrating, cause you're my
zing. Zing, yo, bada bing, yo, gonna knock you right out of that ring, yo. Better bring, yo, happening, yo. Pay attention to the undead king, yo.
So, What else? So basically, not that I put any research into this, but are there any animated features coming out this year that you're looking forward to?
I am looking forward to Monsters University because I, you know somebody who's seen it and they told me good things about it. And the more that I, you know, acquaint myself with the concept of this kind of being Pixar's Animal House, I'm down.
Yeah.
It's not the Monsters, Inc. sequel I wanted, which was, you know, what happens when Boo isn't a kid anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's like
having gotten comfortable with that setup, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, it's.
I don't remember what else is coming out.
Well, Monsters Inc. or Monsters University, I'm definitely looking forward to because Monsters Inc. and The Incredibles are like my two favorite Pixar films. So to have more from either of those universes, I'm very happy about. Plus the fact
Cloudy too, I'm looking forward to.
Hmm.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Too. Yeah, yeah. I actually haven't seen any of the previews for that yet, but just based on how much I liked the first one, I'm excited that there's another one. Despicable Me 2, I'm looking forward to, just because I love the first one so much. And
I might be interested if I could see any trailer for it other than the ones that are just
the minions
doing the banana thing.
Well, there was a teaser trailer during the Super Bowl that shows, like, the minions putting the girls to bed, and then they hear a scary noise outside, and they go outside, and it's just a cat, but then all of a sudden, like, a light appears from the sky, like it's aliens, and they get, like, sucked up into a ship or something. So if I had to guess, maybe, you know, Vector got picked up by aliens on the moon and now they're coming back to, you know, get some revenge on Gru and all them. That's my guess, but, you know, they so far it's just been, you know, that the banana and that teaser from the Super Bowl is all that's been put out. So, what do you think of the Croods?
Because of who's working on it, I wish I liked it.
It's like,
but it just looks like the most stereotypical plot ever.
Yeah, and also the thing I don't like about it is I remember seeing the first time I saw the trailer, and I'm like, visually this looks pretty neat. You know, it's kind of a cheesy family comedy kind of, you know, thing, but, you know, this could be something epic. And then, like, the title comes up, The Croods! Derp, derp, derp! It's like, fuck that title! The Croods. That's like, you know, market research, you know, obviousness. You know, it's like, you know, they could have called it, you know, the cavemen of the blah blah mystical thing or whatever.
You know, I don't know if this is based on something, but it's been, like, called that forever because that was what, you know, after leaving what became Bolt, that's what Chris Sanders was supposed to be working on when he got to DreamWorks. But then How to Train Your Dragon had gotten in so much trouble, they put him on that instead to save it.
Ah, okay.
And so, but yeah, Croods was a project that already existed by the time he got there as well. So we haven't really, you know, even the Croods still isn't the Chris Sanders project that he built from the ground up like Lilo and Stitch was.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the concept of the Croods doesn't do anything for me, and I think the family members look way too similar to each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I see, like, the poster with way too many characters on it that has, like, 8 heads and it's hard to determine anyone from anybody else, it doesn't make me want to see the movie.
Yeah. I've seen a trailer for that movie called Epic, which is another title that seems like, why did you pick that word to be the title of this movie?
Why don't people know what to name movies anymore?
Yeah. And Epic visually looks great, and it could be a great film. The one thing that stood out to me is I like comedian Aziz Ansari, but just putting his voice in a slug doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea. You know, it's like the voice doesn't seem to match, you know, the character he's voicing, you know?
Speaking of slugs, Turbo looks like it could be cool.
I saw the teaser for that, and I'm like, I don't know exactly where they're going with this. I mean, I've read what the plot is online, or, you know, just the synopsis. But, you know, I hope that works. It looks like it could be really funny. So,
is Turbo DreamWorks?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. But
I still say this is a problem that we can't tell who's putting out what movie.
And I can't remember, what's Disney doing next?
I don't know.
The fact that I don't know that is surprising.
Why don't we know?
Off the top of my head. Although
do we know what the next original non-sequel Pixar movie is?
Well, I could go to Wikipedia again. Let's
it's
see.
So weird that we have to.
Yes.
This never used to be the case.
List of Pixar movies. Looks like the next one after Monsters University is The Good Dinosaur, so that's an original story. A movie called Inside Out, I think that might be the one where they go inside the mind or something. Something called Untitled Film. The release date is November 2015. Director TBA, writer TBA, producer TBA. So I'm glad they put that entry in there for us. 2016 has Finding Nemo 2.
The Refindening.
Yeah. And then 2016 also has the untitled Pixar movie about Dia de los Muertos, which could be quite interesting. From what I heard about...
Isn't somebody making a movie about a Shadow Universe?
I don't know.
Maybe, I remember hearing something about that.
But The Good Dinosaur, for what I heard about it, sounds like a really interesting movie.
Here, as they both type.
All right, let's see. The next Disney feature is Frozen, the one based on the Snow Queen. And then after that, something called Big Hero 6, which this is the first I'm hearing of it.
I think that might be like an obscure Marvel property or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. I dig it.
I'm far more interested in that one, actually, than
Frozen. Have you heard, and maybe we talked about this already, I can't remember. Have you heard the weird rumor about the new Mickey Mouse Roger Rabbit movie?
Actually, I don't remember if I was the one who brought that up to you. I really hope this happens because it's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
And it's honestly what they should have been doing for years. But if you haven't heard about this, this is the concept of putting Mickey Mouse and Roger Rabbit in what's essentially a Martin and Lewis movie.
Like they're literally remaking a Martin Lewis movie called The Stooge with Mickey Mouse and Roger Rabbit. And since they've already...
It doesn't necessarily follow the plot exactly, but that's the kind of movie they're making.
Yeah, and considering they've, like I said before, that announcement that they're not doing 2D animation anymore, that means it would have to be a CG film, wouldn't it? So having...
Well, I mean, they haven't greenlit this thing yet, so if they were talking about not doing 2D anymore, it wouldn't necessarily include this concept because they haven't decided to do it.
So, besides the fact that I'd be ecstatic for them to bring back Roger Rabbit in any capacity, the fact that, hey, let's take Mickey Mouse and actually do something with him, it's like House of Mouse is the last time I can think that they did anything with Mickey, but it's like, Mickey generally seems to be a boring character, like, he's...
Well, they're also doing, I probably shouldn't talk about this. There's another Mickey project. I will tell you when we're not recording.
Oh, okay. then again, there's Epic Mickey, which is awesome, and I still haven't gotten all the way through.
Yeah, there's also that, and though it wasn't made for us, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse has been running for quite a while now.
Yeah, that's true. But I just kind of feel like the character of Mickey Mouse himself has never been that interesting of a character. Like, Donald's interesting because, he gets angry, and Goofy's interesting because he makes mistakes. But Mickey's just kind of like this total Mary Sue of, ha-ha! Everything goes just right for me,
Here's the thing. Most of the time, Mickey is paired up with a more interesting character, and so that gives Mickey nothing to do. When Mickey is left on his own, he gets mischievous and bitchy, and he's a better character.
Well, let's hope that they do something, with Mickey to make him more interesting. I mean,
Actually, I would love to, I would love the idea if they managed to make this Mickey Roger movie. This is not a complaint, but if they were to make it like a Mickey and Oswald movie and they made Mickey and Oswald characters that can really play off of each other, they gave Mickey someone with whom he can still shine and yet the other character can still have a personality, gave Mickey an actual relationship with a character, I'd be very interested in that.
So, yeah, is there anything else cartoon related that you can think of?
No, nothing springs to mind.
All right.
Other than, I'm kind of bummed. I just saw a trailer for a turtle video game that's coming out this summer. And instead of being based on the show, it's based on the movie. that I thought was going away.
Oh, I heard that was back on the plate now, that whole freaking Michael Bay thing.
And I will be happy to ignore that movie because there was a good version of Turtles currently happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I was kind of looking forward to a version of the video game, you know, a video game based on this version of Turtles, the TV version.
Yeah, because you and I both really like this.
Yeah.
I'm far from a, you know, complete, total, 100% expert on Ninja Turtles, but there are certain iterations I really got into. Like, you know, I had seen a lot of the original cartoon. I have the entire Archie run of Ninja Turtles, which once the TV series ended and it broke away from that, it went in some really interesting areas, including the Mighty Mutanimals, which were awesome.
It is my favorite version, even if when I go back and read it again, I realize how weirdly preachy it is. But it was still a lot of fun and did a lot of things that none of the other versions would have dared to do.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, just to skip ahead, it's like this new cartoon version of Ninja Turtles on Nickelodeon really seems to be taking the best of every version of the Ninja Turtles and making it into one show.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I love the fact that, you know, they're even like in the opening title sequence, it's like at the very last thing you see is them. They kind of jump into a pose on top of a building, and then the shot goes black and white. So for a split second, it's like you're looking at the original Eastman and Laird, you know, the original comic that they made, you know, and then they zip back to the title. And there's a lot of things that I either didn't know or completely forgot about, like the fact that Baxter Stockman was originally a black dude. It's like, because I liked the fly version so much from the cartoon, that part completely...
Actually, the fly version is the only version in which he was a white guy.
Yeah.
Besides the comic version, the 2003 version, he was also a black guy.
Yeah, and I missed that version of Ninja Turtles, and I actually had a conversation with Jared Perez about this. I'm like, wait a minute, am I wrong? What was the deal with that? And he's like, no, he was always a black guy except for that one time. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, it would be neat if they could somehow bring back the fly character but not have it be Baxter Stockman. Because just because I liked that character, you know, even if they gave him a different name or something, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing about Baxter Stockman is in absolutely every version he's this hapless dude that horrible things always happen to. In the 2003 version, he ended up as a head in the jar by the end of it. Like, he just kept deteriorating, like... You know,
wow.
So it wouldn't be out of the question for this, you know, series as hapless Baxter Stockman to, after a while, become Fly Baxter.
I just love, there was this one gag I remember so distinctly from the cartoon, just cracked me up. Baxter, you know, mutant Baxter Fly is wandering around the April's, you know, TV news building looking for April. And he's like, you know, I'm looking for April O'Neil. I'm looking for April O'Neil. I'm looking for May O'Neil. I'm looking for June O'Neil. And then, like, they cut away and they cut back into the office of that wormy guy. I can't remember his name. But then Baxter just breaks through the wall instead of using the door. And then he looks at him, are you September O'Neil? And then the guy's like, why should I tell you? And he grabs him, because I'm a big fly. She's down the hall. Okay. And then he leaves. It was something like that. Like that
I'm
seeing
the increasing months was an ad lib.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's nice to talk about how much I like the Ninja Turtles without Sarah to immediately say that she doesn't like it because she dislikes the character designs or whatever. I don't understand her point. I mean, I guess I see what she's saying, but... You know, I don't know. I really like what they're doing with it.
Not necessarily my favorite turtle designs, although I do like that they differentiated them from one another. But who cares? The writing's really good, and so is the action.
Yeah, yeah. And this whole thing with Splinter having a daughter is interesting. Is that a new concept?
You mean Shredder?
Or that's what I mean, Shredder having a daughter.
No. But the only time... Well, she's... No, actually, she has shown up in animated versions before, although I had dropped off of the 2003 series by then. But she's also in the... She's in the 2007 movie, but she's not explained to be Shredder's daughter in that.
Oh, okay. All right.
But she started out in the Eastman and Laird comic.
Cool.
In fact, she is the end boss in Turtles Tournament Fighter for Super NES.
Oh, wow. Awesome. All right. Well,
she hasn't quite been depicted like this before. She's, you know, been previously depicted as, like, more grown up and stoic and in charge. This is a completely different personality for her that actually works a lot better.
Well, cool. All right, well, I guess we should wrap this up now that we've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes.
like we do.
Yeah. So now I can't decide, should I make this all one? Because I recorded for like at least 2 hours with Carrie and now an hour and 20 with you. Should I make this one huge episode or make it two separate episodes? I can't decide.
Make it two separate episodes that release within a week of each other.
Okay, that's what I'll do. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Kyle. And we'll have more fun stuff in the future. And we'll be on the Fumpcast this Thursday.
Woo!
So, yeah. All right. So,
well, to think of completely different animation stuff to talk about.
Hooray! Every once in a while, though your results may vary, ding, hello, let's call Carrie. Hey!
Hello?
Hey, Carrie.
Hey.
What color pink are you wearing?
Dark pink.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say right now on the podcast?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we will talk to you again on episode 82, where we'll go through Boob Tree cards and catch up on comments.
Yay.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. What's Boop Vlogging Now? What's at the Fump? What's at the Fump? Can I get a booyah? Hey. All right. I just wanted to throw this on the end of the episode because we haven't done it in a while. So here it is. What's at the Fump? We have Britney Spears is Gonna Freeze Her Head by Glenn Raphael. We have You Might Be by Insane Ian. Song for Baby Alex by Carrie Dalby. Companion Application by Devo Spice. Grandma's House by Bone Cage. Text, A Love Song by Raymond and Scum. Dumbledore's Army by Steve Goody. And I Like 8-Bit Pie by TV's Kyle, which we played in the last episode. So, as well as Song for Baby Alex. So you can go to thefump.com right now and get those for free. Other things I usually plug is my website at thegreatlukeski.com. There's a store where you can buy CDs and MP3s and other things. So, you know, you could do that. I have a website for my art called artbylukeski.com. If you want to hire me to draw caricatures for a party or event in the Chicagoland area, tri-state area, please get a hold of me. I'm also willing to do freelance work for other caricatures and cartooning things. So there's that. The Dr. Demento Show is still on the air and is still awesome. Go to drdemento.com, drdemento.com. You can listen to the show every week. There's a new episode, only $2 for the low-quality stream, or $4 for the high-quality stream. When You Wish Upon a Death Star, my Logan Award-winning song, was number 2 on the top 10. And the previous 2 top 10s, it was at number 1. So it went number 1, number 1, number 2. And right now it is the most requested song of 2013 on the Dr. Demento Show. So if you would like it to stay that way, then please, for the love of God, go request it at drdemento.com, drdemento.com. Click on the request link and request When You Wish Upon a Death Star by the great Luke Ski. Yeah, and be sure to include your email address so that it counts towards the top 10 at the end of this month. Tour dates, something I've been lacking in mentioning to everybody, is that I am booked to perform at MarCon in Columbus, MarCon 2013. Their website is marcon.org. It is happening at the High Urgency Columbus in Columbus, Ohio, March 29th, 30th, and 31st. I'll be showing all of my puppet videos in a panel called Lukeski Presents the Fumpet Show on Saturday at 10 a.m. in Fairfield. Following that, in the same room will be concerts by the music guests of honor Toy Boat at 1 p.m., Tom Smith at 2:30 p.m., and me, the Great Luke Ski, doing a concert at 4 p.m. Again, that's all happening on Saturday that weekend in Fairfield. I'll also be manning the Fump merch table in the dealer room all weekend when I'm not doing my scheduled programming, so if you're interested in helping me out at the merch table or helping me out at my shows, please let me know, because I'm going to be there all alone and I could really use the help. So just email me or contact me somehow and let me know if you have the ability to help me out that weekend. Okay. Speaking of tour dates, I just wanted to mention, these are not booked, but I will hopefully, or probably be at, the following convention I'm about to mention, DuckCon. Oh wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me jump back a bit. I should mention on the booked side of things, the ones that are definitely booked, LukeskiCon. Obviously, I'll be there. For those of you who are Kickstarter donors, the website is LukeskiCon.com. If you did not get the message via Kickstarter that included the password to gain full access to LukeskiCon.com, then contact me and I'll give you the password. Apparently the Kickstarter email function is jacked up and doesn't work and goes into people's spam folders. So again, LukeskiCon.com for the Kickstarter donors who are planning on going. It is the weekend of June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, happening in the Chicagoland area. So yeah, that's, you know, MarCon 2013 is booked. LukeskiCon 2013 is booked. Also booked is OsFest 6, O-S-F-E-S-T, OsFest 6, which is in Omaha, Nebraska. Their website is osfes.org, so there's no T there, osfes.org. They're happening at the Ramada Plaza Omaha Hotel and Convention Center in Omaha, Nebraska, July 26th, 27th, and 28th, 2013. I'll be the guest of honor there doing concerts and stuff. Don't have the details worked out yet, but it should be a lot of fun. I've never done a convention in Omaha before, so hopefully there'll be a fun crowd who has yet to hear my stuff. Anyway, where was I? So yeah, those are the three that are definitely for sure booked. The ones that I will probably be at, include DuckCon in the Chicagoland area the weekend after LukeskiCon. Convergence in the Twin Cities, 4th of July weekend. I'm hoping I'll be there. I know that there was a caricature gig potentially happening that weekend that, I don't know, maybe that's not happening anymore. I'll have to double check, look into that. Yeah. So anyway, I'll hopefully be at Convergence if I'm not off somewhere making a shit ton of money doing caricatures at a big long party. Nerdapalooza, I'm going to try to get booked at again. We'll cross my fingers, hope that'll happen. And then, of course, Gen Con Indy, which I've already begun discussing things with Mark Gunn and the people at Gen Con I usually do stuff with. So that's virtually a lock, but I don't want to consider it officially booked just yet. The ones I know for sure I won't be at Mid-South Con because, you know, it's too soon. I haven't had any contact with them and, you know, quite frankly, it's not a big moneymaker for me. You know, I love seeing those people, but you know, without them covering, travel or hotel costs, it's kind of hard for me to afford to go to Mid-South Con. So sorry, I'm missing that, again this year, maybe next year. And it looks like, unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss PenguinCon this year because I have two caricature gigs that weekend. You know, when you combine them, I'm going to be making, like, you know, well over $500 between the two gigs, which is way more than I would make if I had gone to PenguinCon and attempted to, you know, do a concert and sell CDs there. I do know that Bill Putt is intending to, you know, bring back the comedy music presence of PenguinCon. So even though I won't be there, you should keep an eye on PenguinCon to see who will be there this year doing some comedy music concerts. I definitely want to return there in 2014. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough for tour dates. The Fumpet Show is on YouTube, as you probably all already know. So if you haven't watched it already, please go watch The Fumpet Show. It's at my YouTube page, youtube.com/TheGreatLukeSki. Last time I checked, it had just under 1,000 views. So please watch it, and if you like it, please share it with your friends. Yes, I know it's quite long, but I think you'll think it's worth it. So yeah, check out The Fumpet Show. Share it with your friends. And I should remind you that The Fumpcast is another podcast that I do with Devo Spice every Thursday night live on Dementia Radio, and then we post it to the stream. And one of this week's guests will be TV's Kyle. So there will for sure be more cartoon talk with Kyle and I on that episode. So if you're catching this episode in time, tune into the Fumpcast on Thursday the 14th of March. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's about it. As I said before, talking to Carrie, next episode I will go over some of those boob tree cards with her we did at MarsCon so that she can see the wackiness and the funniness, and then I'll post scans of some of those for you to all see. And we will read the comments on the past, you know, three or so episodes that have posted since the last time we actually read comments. So please do make comments. We will read them, I promise you. You can make them at the website, badreport.com, BADREPPORT.com. Just click on the comment button for each episode and leave your comments for that episode there. You can also call the hotline, the Bad Report hotline, which is 916-LUKESKI, 916-585-3754. So yeah, you can do that. Leave comments there. You could also leave us an iTunes review, which admittedly I haven't checked, but hey, I'll check on that before we get to the comments. So you can leave us a star rating, you can leave us a review, whatever you feel like. Yeah. So hope you all enjoyed this special bonus edition of Bad Report with Kyle and Luke talking about cartoons, Part 4. Who knows when Part 5 will be? But, you know, as I said, about once a month, Kyle appears in the Fumpcast and we talk about cartoons there as well. So anyway, thanks for listening. One more song before we go, and we will see you next time on Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. See ya!
Listening to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport.
All right, well, say hi to Lindsay for me, and I'll talk to you again
Luke
sometime
says
soon.
Hi!
Hi, Lindsay!
Hi, Lindsay!
Hi, Lindsay!
Leave comments for this episode at badrapport.com or call 916-LUKE-SKI.